I'm June Nilsson. I'm the Lutheran campus pastor at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And we're going to spend a little time tonight talking about storytelling. It's as it says in the title, it is an oral art. And most people don't understand it to be that. It's not theater. You don't have a big set and lighting and a director and a whole cast. The storyteller is the storyteller. And the storyteller has to rely on collaboration with the listener. Jesus, you know, used stories as a very prime way of communicating who he was and who we are. And he spoke about being as little children. He said, well, except you become as a little child, you cannot enter into the kingdom. And it's very much that way in terms of storytelling. Do we have any grandmas and grandpas here? Grandmas and grandpas, do we have parents here? Got parents here? And all of us are children, aren't we? I mean, we all were somehow a child of some mother and father, or we wouldn't be sitting here. The beginnings of our heritage as Christians, in fact, started through the oral tradition, through the telling of the story, from the eyewitness account, from the energies. And I often think if we in the 20th century had that kind of excitement and passion, that kind of urgency about communicating the story, what we call the drama of salvation, that probably the church would be growing by leaps and bounds. But we have sort of institutionalized our story. We have put it into a kind of a doctrinal format. We have handed it to the experts, those who are trained, and have used the vehicle often of preaching to communicate that word. When in fact, it's our story. We're all a part of that story. And we're all a part of how that story is communicated. Storytelling is a folk art. It is a listening language experience. I have had people sometimes ask me for my sermons, and I say, you gotta be kidding. I just gave you my sermon. No, we'd like a copy of it. The point of storytelling or preaching is that it is a live art, and it is collaborative, and it takes energy, and it takes a certain rapport. Now, maybe I'm dating myself, but I know there are faces in this circle that will remember such marvelous things as Let's Pretend on Saturday morning on the radio. How are we going to go today? How do you want to go?
Bus.
Everybody get on, and here we go. And the engine takes off, and the music begins, and we are away. I can remember it. Now, this is another thing that dates me, I'm sure. Sunday evening with the squeaky door, suspense. And there'd be this, and you'd lay there in bed and it'd be all dark and you'd listen to the story and you'd get all scared and your heart would go like this. And you'd be just laying there, and then you'd be almost relieved when you heard your mother coming up the steps and the door would open to the bedroom and there'd be some light that would come in, because your mind was so involved in the action and in the sounds that you were a creative part of what was occurring. There's a lot of power in the spoken word. We underestimate it. The spoken word triggers images and feelings from the very depth of who we are. That's why it's really okay to get into fairy tales when you're a little kid. You can explore witches and demons and all those scary things because you're probably sitting in your mother's lap. And so you have a safe base, and you have arms, and you have someone who will take you into those scary places, and you know it's not all kidding. You know there's a certain reality there. But you also know that it is told in a relational sense, so that you have some feeling of security. The storyteller has, what are the tools that are at your disposal as a storyteller? What have you got?
Voice in your body.
Your voice?
Your body.
Your body. But not in the same way that the actor or the actress does. Because generally the storyteller can use facial expressions or gestures, but the storyteller is the medium through which the story is being told. So the storyteller does not want to detract necessarily from the events and the excitement. So anything the storyteller does really is to open you into a creative collaboration with these events and these characters and these feelings. But you do have your body, and you do have your voice, you do have your face. What else do you have? You have your own imagination. What can that do for you? What can your own imagination do for you in telling that story?
What you're trying to create.
Okay, and how does that happen? Somebody tell me, call out a story, a fairy tale, a favorite story about Jesus, a moment in our history that we all might be able to plug into. Somebody give me a story.
Little Red Riding
Hood. Little Red Riding Hood, okay. What does the storyteller have working for her or him in the Little Red Riding Hood story? All right, like what?
Wolf and hunger. Little girl and innocence.
Okay. Can you all hear that? Little girl, innocence, hunger.
Grandma.
Grandma.
He's got the story already written for him. The storyteller has already got.
Okay, all right, All right, there's material there. But at what point does the storyteller make that come off the printed page and become a breathing, living experience? At what point does the storyteller take that off the printed page, put breath into it, and make it alive?
From the moment she or he starts.
All right. We all know Little Red Riding Hood, right? That's a common tale that all of us have. But each one of us, if we really were to inhabit that story, could own it from a different perspective. Because we have our own story, our own reason why Little Red Riding Hood is significant for us. Why do you want to tell the story of Little Red Riding Hood? Why is that an important story to keep telling generation after generation? What does it say about the human condition? What does it smell like? Can you smell that wolf? Is that how Grandma smelled? Not my grandma, I don't think.
Deception.
Somebody presenting themselves in a way that in fact is not real, not true. Has that ever happened to you? Where someone has had a presenting image or has met you on a certain level, and after you have explored the relation and gotten deeper into it, you've discovered that you've been had? This person is not who you thought this person was. How does it feel to be deceived? Or to be tricked?
Yeah.
or to be drawn into something in a matter of trust, and to have the whole thing reverse on you. So that what you came into, assuming that you had a trust relationship and a confidence, all of a sudden reverses on you, and you are victimized. You are in a state of terror. How does that feel?
Foolish.
Foolish? What else?
Scary.
Scary.
Helpless.
Helpless, powerless.
Angry.
Angry.
Very angry.
Very angry. How else? What does that activate in you again?
Fear.
Fear? And to put it in the old language, you know, of the parent-child, this kind of relationship, doesn't it kind of get to your kid inside? I mean, that kind of vulnerable, out-of-control victim position that why would you tell a child a story like Little Red Riding Hood? Or why would you come back to that again? Why is that significant?
I never thought it was significant. I just thought I read it because it was read to me, and it was just
a story.
I wouldn't tell the story.
You wouldn't tell Little Red Riding. Why not?
It's too violent.
They're like a little scared.
Yeah, no violent memories of that story whatsoever.
I don't
know. All the big teeth and all the better teeth. That was always funny. We laughed and giggled and thought it was great fun.
Okay.
I guess that's part of the point of that, though. How the story is saying laughing and violence, you know, maybe that's just bred into us or something.
I think we'd want to be scared. You know, kids like to get and tell ghost stories. They really like it. It would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. You know. I mean, that's why the murder was proven there. I mean, the movies are the same thing. It's scary on
it.
We like to be gross, too.
We like to be gross. We like to be scared.
So I don't want to encourage that.
Okay. We like to be threatened. And a lot of what has that, what makes that happen in terms of the storyteller's role is the use of the voice, the pacing, the loudness, the softness, the tenderness, the fear. All of that is communicated in the face, the pitch of the voice, the pauses. There is something very arresting about a pause. It's a very effective tool. Little Red Riding Hood was skipping along in the woods when something moved behind her. Now the storyteller has to hear it. Can you hear it? There's something in the woods. Oh, well. You have to sensually hear. You have to taste the berries. You have to smell the woods. Inhale it. Take a deep breath. Oh, the pine. What a beautiful day. Isn't it beautiful? Aren't you glad to be here? Aren't these woods magnificent? And we're going to see Grandma. Isn't that fun? You remember when you used to go to see Grandma? Was that fun? Was she nice lady? Did you like her? The storyteller has to inhabit the story. You have to understand that this is a story that you want to share. You have to have some excitement, some energy about this story. There has to be something about this story that you can identify and live in and with, and that you want to spill over to the listener. Otherwise, the listener is not going to be engaged. If you aren't there, if it isn't real for you, if it isn't something you think is significant to tell, it's going to be really boring.
And you've got to know the story. You can't be reading it, really.
You can't. A storyteller tells.
Mm-hmm. You really know that story.
You don't read. You don't read.
It's part of you.
You have to have that story be a part of, and there has to be something about it. You're the bringer of the news. You're the teller of the tale. You're the one who is helping the other to envision this character or to move on the journey. People should be like this. What happens next? How does it end? Where are you taking us? Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! I hope not. Is that going to happen? Oh, I hope not. Oh. Oh. Thank goodness. I thought for a minute there that... Have you ever watched children when they're really involved in a story? They're really excited, and they're really there, and you got them in the palm of your hand. That's how sermons ought to be. The preacher has the most dramatic, exciting, powerful story ever told. There should never be a boring sermon. There's no excuse for that. And part of what must happen is not only does the storyteller feel excited and inhabit, does the storyteller inhabit the story, but the listeners begin to image and give back energy and pictures. They begin to get involved so that there is a mutuality. It's like preaching in that sense. The good preacher should be getting energy from the congregation. The good preacher should throw out images that in turn are clicking off pictures and sensations. And you know, down south, they always talk about how the congregation is going to bear the preacher up. Going to bear the preacher up. And they say, amen, amen, amen. Which means, we hear you, brother, we hear you. Come on, come on, we're with you. And they're giving you some energy back. You tell the story in a Lutheran congregation. And you just don't know if the folks are with you or they aren't.
Amen.
Part of the storyteller's task, then, is to get into the little child, to the innermost feeling level, the imagination, to call the person out of themselves into the larger concept. A lot of our history, our personal and our corporate history, comes through storytelling. We all have favorite stories, don't we? Tomorrow is my birthday. It's the first day of summer. And my mother tells about what a beautiful, beautiful day it was. And they never thought of calling me June. But I was born early on the first day of summer in western Minnesota. And she awoke and the room was filled with peonies and roses. And my father came in, and then the doctor came in and said, Marjorie, it's the cutest little bug you ever saw. And my mother said, Carl, we have to name this child June. That's a very simple story. But it's a lot of how I image myself. I'm a summer child. I'm a little bug. And for me, in Minnesota, summer means a turn of season, and it means warmth, and it means fragrance and greenness and lake and a lot of beautiful things. And I've often thought to myself, I'm glad you named me June. And not only that, but for 30 days all over the world, everybody writes my name. And that makes me very significant, doesn't it? We nurture one another in our stories. It's a nurturing way. It's a sharing way. We say something about how we image ourselves and where we came from. You all have stories in your families. How Grandpa came over from Norway on the boat. Stavanger country, that's where mine came from. The day John F. Kennedy was shot, does that resonate? The day Martin Luther King was shot, the Holocaust, is that a part of our historical framework, a part of the story? The day of Hiroshima, how do we communicate that story to the next generation? How do we interpret for them what it was like to be a part of the American public when that news came? How do we tell that story with some sort of passion and urgency and involvement? How do we open the mind's eye to put them back into that historical framework through the first-hand witness account of those of us who picked up the newspaper or had the radio on or remember when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, for example? And every single one of us can resonate with that moment of history because it's our history and it's our story. And we each have some facet of light to reflect upon in the telling of that story. And it's not the story they're going to read in the history books. It's their family's story. It's the human account of where my mother was on December 7th, 1941, and how she responded when that news came when she was a child. There's a certain drama in everybody's life here. There is a certain set of characters that have formed you and brought you here in this moment to Holden Village. And you can think of them. You can visualize them. You can see their faces. Why are they significant to you? In what way did they touch you? How did they become part of your story? Why is it important for you to share that story? How does that humanize all of us? And if it is told with integrity, and if you own it, and if you can translate that with some kind of meaningful essence, should I say, then other people will be enlarged by it, will know better. In other words, stories are our love gifts. They're part of our willingness to be vulnerable with one another, to share where we have been and what we're dreaming about. And they heighten our awareness, give us a sense of wonder. Somebody can tell you a story, and they've lived it. They're used to it. It's their story. There's nothing unusual about it. It's where they've been and who they are. And yet, as you hear that story, you sit back and think, oh my God, that's incredible. I just can't believe that any one person could have been through all of that. How did you endure? How in the world were you able to move through all of those things that have happened to you and still have hope? How in the world? I have a friend who was a child in Germany during the Nazi years, who went through all that, who came over here, who got married, who thought she was happily married, and her husband packed up and left one afternoon. I mean, bingo, just like that. Wham! Fell in love with a young Japanese physician and was gone. And then she discovered that she had cancer. And then on New Year's Eve, she called me and said, I can't come to your party. Valerie is dead. I said, I don't believe this. What do you say? She was in an automobile accident this afternoon on her way on a skiing trip. And I think, how? Do you do it? Where's the resiliency? She's working on her doctorate now. And because I've been a part of her story and she's been willing to tell it and to share it in very clear and straight and concise terms, it has impacted me. It has changed my story. Storytelling is a folk art. It's an oral art. It is a sensory art. It is a felt art, an experienced art. Storytelling is sharing something of who we are. And it's touching that innermost circle of our being that helps us then to have the courage to own something of our own journey in the presence of other people. There's conflict, there's action, there's humor. It calls out visualization. It fosters compassion. You try to get into this miraculous experience of feeling with another person in their story, in their journey. It has to come from a very deep desire to share, to tell a story. Means to take another person's time, to invite them into a collaborative kind of energy. So you have to know your story, yes. You have to know yourself and why it is that this is an important story for you to share. you have to be able to recreate. You know, have you ever had anybody tell you a story and it goes really flat? And then they sort of say flippantly, well, I guess you had to be there. The storyteller had the responsibility to put you there. To recreate the scene, to put you there. To help you inhabit it, to tell, make it clear to you why they felt it was important to take you there and to share it. Timing is extremely important. Emphasis. Only if you enter into the story wholeheartedly will it ring true. And this, by, as a little aside, for those of us who are part of the Christian story, is also true. Only when you have entered fully into the story, experienced it, owned it, when you retell it, only then does it ring true. Only then does it have a certain integrity and genuineness about it. And you have to pick up the color of the language. Not only the rhythm and the cadence, but the color of the language. Our language is very colorful. Somebody said to me, are you going down to the crafts barn? And I said, oh no, my craft is words. I'm not good with my hands. When you tell a story, this is one thing, by the way, that I think clobbers a lot of sermons. Read the story. Get the kernel. Define it clearly. Don't go off on all these little flashbacks and these subplots and these complicated. That's written language. A novel can do that. A novel can develop a story at many different levels and bring in many different, like a weaver makes a very complex. A storyteller has a story to tell. It should be direct. It should be simple. It should be centered not so much in attitudes as in events. What's happening here? What's going on? Where are you taking us? What's next? It should be clear. You should define your characters very clearly so people are able to identify with them, to envision them. When you say Little Red Riding Hood, how does Little Red Riding Hood? Obviously, she has a little red hood, right? That's why they call her that. How old is she? Is she fat? Is she scrawny? Does she have long curls? Is her hair in braids? This basket, is it a basket that she's taking to Grandma? Or is it a basket that she's taking to Grandma? What does she look like? Is she a nice little girl? Is she fun and sweet? Is she spoiled and nasty? Do you like her? Where is she? What's happening to her? Why is she going to see Grandma? How far does Grandma live? Is this a 15-minute jaunt, or is she at it all day, or what's happening in the story? How can you put me there? How can you get me involved in it? How can I care about Little Red Riding Hood and what happens to her? And how much room can I leave you to paint your own pictures? To fill in your own details in your own mind so that you can can be on the journey. What are the key events in this story? Where do we start? Where are we going? What's our pace? Where are we taking people? What's the upshot of this thing? What's the destination? One of the things that kills a story, in my estimation, is that you don't seem to be getting there. And nothing really significant is happening here. It's just sort of, you know, it's just boring, really. It's really boring.
Hey,
and let's see what happens next, kind of thing. And the storyteller even loses interest. Where are you starting? How long is the trip? Where are you headed? What's the point? Why do you want to share it? Where's your energy level in this thing? How creative is your ability to move the action, to involve people at a feeling level, and to help them create pictures and characters that make some kind of a significant impact on them, so that after 10 minutes when they get up, they've heard a story. They've been there. It's important to be very rhythmic. Oral language is rhythmic. It's to be heard. Now, if you pick up a book and you go in the corner, that's a very privatized experience between you and the print. You can shut out the world. You can read at your own pace. You can read in a monotone in your head. And that's your business. Print is very isolating. It's a very privatized medium. Storytelling is a collaborative medium. It's a sharing medium. It's an exciting medium. And the language should move. It should be, that's another thing about your Southern preacher. Have you ever heard a Southern preacher? They get a certain rhythm in their preaching. There's a certain energy and excitement and celebration about the telling of the story. And the people bear them up. Well, the same in storytelling. There should be a certain cadence and rhythm and fun and interest in the language. There are some words that are a lot of fun, and they bear repeating. You know, like nursery rhymes. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick. How many kids love the rhythm and the repetition of the nursery rhyme? Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick. That's a whoopee. Say it. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick. Let's do it again. It's fun. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick. You see? Well, that's what the storyteller should do. Should set up a rhythm with you, get a pace with you, certain cadence in the language. If Little Red Riding Hood's going through the woods, well then, Little Red Riding Hood's going through the woods. She's skipping along, she's happy, the morning's bright, and you should be skipping along with her. And part of your pacing and your tone and your energy and your interest in this child should be communicated. So, what I'd like you to do is go in a couple little circles here and pick a story, either a folk tale or perhaps your favorite story about Jesus, or a story from your shared history. And get in a circle and just think through about, why is this story worth telling? Why would I want to tell it? What are some of the images that come to mind? Who are the characters that are involved here? And what's the mood? What's the mood of my story? Or how does it shift? Little Red Riding Hood starts out down the road through the woods, skipping and happy to see Grandma. And by the end of the story, where's the reversal? Where's the surprise? What happens? Form three little circles and decide which of these three groups you'd like to be dealing with. And take a few minutes and just talk about stories. If I can have your attention. An hour is obviously not long enough, right? What I'm more interested in here is not just the story that you might come up with, but the process that you used as a group to try to arrive at what was meaningful for you to tell. Could you just very quickly, from group to group, tell which of the three categories you picked and which story you were beginning to look at? Let's start over here. Which?
We have spent a lot of time discussing and just getting to know each other. We don't trust each other. We don't trust each other enough yet to really tell the story.
So you really didn't...
We talked about the three bears.
We talked about pigs.
And the three pigs.
Okay, the three bears. You went for the fairy tale instead of the Jesus or the lived experience. Why did you go for the fairy tale, do you think?
Oh, we tried to get a real experience, but it was too personal.
Which is very common, actually, we all.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bruno Bettelheim said that fairy tales help children cope with the psychological problems of growing up. So maybe that's where that group is. No. I'm very sorry because we really could go on all evening with this. This is really an interesting way to get into it. But now group number two, just because we got Vespers at 8 o'clock.
We threw out a lot of ideas and everybody said, and we just kind of listened and what we ended up was a personal story.
You mean each one of you had a personal story or historical?
We wanted it to be personal, that's all we knew. And then we threw out different ideas about personal. Whatever we felt kind of safe with, we all agreed on.
That was a common thread.
We were developing a concept built around things that have happened in driving experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Violations or accidents.
Or funny things. And we were in the middle of trying to throw that out and put something that was cohesive together based on our background and driving experience that might have been funny when we first started learning how to drive. Or embarrassing, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You mean literally driving?
Yeah, driving. Yeah.
Driving,
yeah,
like
right.
In an automobile.
That's right.
Now that would have a whole lot of levels of interest there, I'm sure, that we unfortunately don't explore here. Next.
What does it say about the personal
question? No. Now, what did this group go for?
We were doing Bible stories.
Oh, isn't that? You did the fable, the fairy tale. You did the lived experience, and you're into the Bible story.
Stories. Okay. We never really tried to single out one. We just kept finding a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope this opened up something in your awareness. And that you will be more conscious about images and telling stories and the significance of that. And would you please reflect on it, and you can share, you know, beyond here.
Do you have any other sources for stories telling?
There's a really good book by Augusta Baker and Ellen Green called Storytelling Art and Technique, which is really good. Probably find it in your public library somewhere. Yeah. And then Bruno Bettelheim, The Uses of Enchantment, The Meaning and Importance of Fairy Tales, is another very good one. Yeah.